Nice Games Club is on break for the next few weeks, so your nice host can take time to wrap up work on Widget Satchel, coming to PC, Xbox One, PS4, and Nintendo Switch in 2019. In the meantime, we picked out a few of our favorite episodes from our first 2 years in the clubhouse. This is episode 9, Will You Be the Best With Me? Gaming Mastery Strategy Guides and Designing Party Games. I love this episode because it was one of the first episodes where I felt like we really got into podcasting for reals. I remember after we got done recording this episode, we just all looked at each other and we're like, this is a good one. And I think it was so good because we had personal stories to tell about each topic, and we each had different viewpoints on each topic, and we had a really engaging discussion. So be nice and have a listen.
So before we really get into it, I think we need to thank someone, one of our listeners, for their wonderful iTunes review.
Yes, I think we should.
Yay!
All right, which one of us is going to thank him?
Well, I'll start. Thank you, Duok, for giving us an awesome iTunes review.
That's right. The very first iTunes review, 5 stars even, which means we're off to a rollicking good start.
Yes.
And the headline was, great hosts, great topics. So
thank you.
Appreciate that a lot.
Right. So be like Duok and let us know how great we are. That's Or what, Martha?
Or not, if you don't like us.
All right, be honest, I suppose. send us a review on iTunes or wherever podcasts are distributed. Do you guys have any other business for today?
No.
I need a gavel.
Yeah, there we go. We need a gavel.
Where's Katie when we need her?
Meeting adjourned.
Our three topics have a nice progression. I'm pleased about the setup. So hopefully our listeners will as well. Steven, get us going.
Yes. So my topic is video game mastery. I'm curious what video game mastery means to you two. To me, it means more of like you have a complete understanding of how the game functions enough to play it to its full capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, for example, you play Street Fighter so exceptionally that you can compete with the best of them.
Mm-hmm.
And by the best of them, I mean whoever's really good in your neighborhood. Not necessarily.
Steven, you could say it. You.
I mean, yeah me. So I'm curious, how do you guys feel about video game mastery? What does it mean to you?
I don't know. I'm kind of... For me, and we've talked about this off mic, in that I feel like games don't need to be mastered.
Okay.
I feel like, I don't know, I mean, maybe it's because like when I play a game, I kind of do start to finish, or if it's not a game that has an ending, you know, I play for a while, and then I'm kind of ready for the next thing, or I learn, I guess I treat it like movies or story, like even if there is not a lot of story, I kind of absorb it, and then I move on. I'm not one to really maximize it. And the one exception to that is a Super Mario game.
Oh, okay.
That I will, and only the 2D ones. Those ones I actually put some time into. And I don't know if that's nostalgia or just those are the ones I've given the time to unlock that my natural ability to actually want to master games.
Okay.
But I guess I just have a lot of experience with this concept. And I feel I'm confused when I see it in others.
Mm.
Because it feels like a lot of time you could be spending on other things. I know that's weird to say on a video game podcast, you know what I mean?
So no, I got it.
That's why I like this topic, because you can maybe help me out.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So it sounded as though to you, video game mastery is more completing the game. Like completing the game.
Oh,
like getting all the
currency
or whatever.
I guess I don't use that term, but as far as I ever go with it, is like, the developer design win scenario. That's kind of what I want.
Okay.
Or if it's a multiplayer game, enough to have fun and maybe be competitive, but like among my friends.
Sure.
Like, and that is why I do not play games like Street Fighter or Smash even, because those games, the audiences of them require at least a little bit more mastery than I am. I want to say able, but the truth is willing to provide.
Okay. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Martha, how do you feel?
When I took that the motivation quiz, because it's awesome motivation quiz that everyone should take because it's really insightful on why different people choose and like different games. Mastery is one of the 5 or 6 like main categories, and I scored very low on mastery.
Well, I guess I'm outnumbered here.
Yeah, but
get 'em.
But. I feel like I do strive for mastery in strategy or like city building games and civilization sort of things, because I play like, how can I get this city built exactly the way I want it to, and to get the win condition fast enough.
Okay.
Like, I just went back and played, Pharaoh Cleopatra.
Oh, what is that?
Ah, it's like, what's the, can't remember what it's called. Age of Empires, maybe? It's the city building game, but back in time.
Yeah, I think that's Age of Empires.
Okay. It's like that, except same company, I'm pretty sure, except it's in ancient Egypt. Okay. It's not very well balanced. But I spent a lot of time trying to figure out, like, how can I twist this game to be optimal?
Mm, okay. So optimization is what you look for in Mastery, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So what is it about Mastery that you guys don't enjoy, though? Because to me, I don't know. For me, when I'm approaching it, I like feeling like I've understood what the game developer, the maximum that the game developer has asked of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I don't always reach that. As much as I say I'm amazing at Smash, I'm not really that good. I can't go into Evo and start competing with Zero and stuff. But like, being able to see that, see the stuff that other people have achieved and try to strive for that is something that drives me in certain games.
Sure.
Especially fighting games, because that's most of, at least that's to me, most of the point of fighting games.
Yeah.
But you guys don't see that? You don't feel that drive?
I guess that sort of, that notion of accomplishment, that's, I don't get anything out of it.
Okay.
And I think that, and it might be experience, right? I haven't put the time in, and so haven't come to like it.
Yeah.
So it might just be that. I don't know that this is necessarily an ideological thing. Mm-hmm. But when I think about it, I feel like I don't feel that that's a sense of accomplishment. Like, I don't think gaming is a skill.
Oh,
I guess.
Okay.
And I don't know if that's controversial, but because it seems kind of just natural to me that gaming is an activity. It's fun. Yeah. And yeah, the competitive games, there's, which isn't to say that you shouldn't want to get good at a game because it's fun. Like,
right.
But I guess I feel the same way about sports. Like, sports are fun to play, but I wouldn't ever, even if I had the natural talent, I wouldn't want to win the Super Bowl. Like, that does not sound interesting to me. Like, is that weird? Like, I don't know.
I don't know. It's just, I don't know. To me, it's like you're trying to be the best.
I guess that's whatever. It. I don't ever want to be the best?
Do,
I do not care if I'm the best.
Okay. Huh. Man,
I don't want to be the worst, I suppose. No,
well, yeah. But
I actually don't even mind if I'm the worst. I mean, insofar that if I'm the worst, I'll have no fun.
Okay. Yeah.
That's kind of all it.
If you're the worst and you still have fun, you don't care. For the most part?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. That is...
I mean, we play board games here twice a month, and I'm very frequently the worst. And I have really a blast. So
yeah, I mean,
proof's there.
It's important to have fun while you're playing the game, but at the same time, like, well, I don't know. It's different for me. It depends on the game. Strategy games, I don't like, because I don't tend to enjoy them very much.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't tend to strive for mastering those. But action games, I'm at least decent at, and so I try to do that.
Yeah.
And even if it's not a competitive thing, like, I try to get high achievements in certain things, like Bayonetta or Devil May Cry or whatever.
I am sometimes a completionist, though.
Okay.
But like, if completionist in a game like Assassin's Creed, which has sucked many people in, that is not even about skill. Mm-hmm. That is just about time.
Oh, yeah, for real.
So like, I will be victim to that motivation, certainly. And I'm maybe disparaging it, but it has similar roots, right?
I mean, sort of, but yeah, like
wanting it all.
Right? Yeah, but at the same time, wanting it all is different from Matt trying to be the best.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah,
yeah, right.
Yeah. You feel it? Martha's feeling me. Okay.
But I feel also like I want to win.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't necessarily. When I think of mastery, I think of like platformers or like really, really, really hard games that you have to be very technically skilled in order to complete. Like Mario, I had a Game Boy version of Mario. I played the first level and could not get past it. And I was like, this is boring. I'm not doing this anymore.
Okay.
<Yeah. laughs> To be fair to you, Martha, Super Mario Land is not a great game. I recently played it on the 3DS. And I was like, oh, great. It's a Mario game I haven't been exposed to because I never had it growing up. It isn't that great. The jumping is not as good. That's one of those ones where nostalgia has lifted it a little more than I think it deserves.
Yeah.
So just to, you know, help you out a bit there, I guess.
But but like we played Mega Man.
Oh yeah,
something.
Which one was it? Mega Man 6.
It was X6. So hard.
It was, yeah.
I can see exactly what I'm going to have to do in order to beat this.
Yeah.
And it will take a really long time to get all that muscle memory and stuff. Yeah. I'm like, that is not like something I'm interested in spending
right.
time doing.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I do feel similar to that. Okay. Like when I understand what it'll take, I'm like, well, now I know that's good enough for me.
Yeah, I can see that. But, well, I guess maybe you guys just haven't gotten into I suppose I'm speaking specifically in action game terms. Sure. Maybe there's like a strategy game. Because, Martha, you were just talking about you got into mastering the Egyptian game.
Mm-hmm.
Are there other strategy games that you felt like you wanted to master?
Civ.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Of course, listeners heard all about that. Wait, no, maybe they haven't.
No, they haven't.
Because we didn't release that episode. Well, I really like Civ.
Our unaired pilot, we talked about Civ 6. And, but it, interesting stuff, like recap, if you mm-hmm. like.
Yeah.
I don't like finishing that game. I only like playing the first mm-hmm. and like middle parts of it, mm-hmm. which might speak to the mastery thing, because I want to, like, if once I win, that's like, it's over, like you can't, you know, I don't know, like doing the same part of it over and over and over again
yeah.
to try to like be the most best optimal quickest path to whatever, having the most points or whatever.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that sounds like mastery to me.
Okay, so I do understand.
Okay, well maybe I'm not as alone as I thought.
In like fighting games, I do want to win,
yeah.
but I don't want to put the time
right.
invested to like math. But like for Smash specifically, mm-hmm. I only play Kirby.
You don't do the rock strategy, do you? Down B in the everything?
I mostly swallow people.
Oh, okay. That's better than most. Okay, yeah, interesting.
So that's a little bit of mastery, because yeah. I'm like, well, I don't play this very often,
yeah.
so I'm going to play the character that I know the best and that I'm like, will continue to work on learning.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, so Smash is a good example. Like the times I play as Meta Knight, mm-hmm. and Meta Knight's not as powerful.
Oh, man. In Brawl? Not in Brawl.
And I really liked that
because
there was the thing he does, that little drill move.
Yeah.
And I actually got good at doing that. And as soon as I got comfortable with it, then I could get a little better at it. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm with you, Martha, that like there's that level of mastery that counts.
Mm.
I'm giving us a permission on that, which is to say that like, that's the level we reach and feel that we've mastered it, you know, air quotes.
Yeah.
Because then our interest fades. And that's where then after that, it's just a task, not mastery anymore.
So right? You just want to master like a specific aspect of the game, but not the game itself.
Just
it sounds like.
Enough to get the fun we want from
okay.
it, right?
I don't know. I guess so.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Such a interesting view.
Yeah,
haven't experienced.
Well,
tell us about.
Well,
like, give us your history. Like,
sure, yeah, all right. I mean, I play a bunch of fighting games. I went into a Soul Calibur 5 tournament once. Won like $7.
Ooh.
I won $5, and the entrance fee was $7. That's what it was. So
not as good.
Net loss of $2. But I mean, I think I got fourth place, and I've competed in a couple of tournaments. I haven't recently. I've mm-hmm. been so busy. But those kinds of things I really enjoy, because I'm competing with other people and we're all trying to be the best.
Yeah.
And even if it's just in our small little area. And so like that level of competition where it's just you and this other person, and you are communicating through the language of video games. It's kind of, it's thrilling in a strange way. And I mean, there are other games that aren't multiplayer, like Bayonetta. Bayonetta is extremely difficult when you first start. For me, it was anyways. Like you will die a ton. Mm-hmm. I mean, not like Dark Souls bad. But like, it just takes some time. So like, I went online and I looked up how the heck I'm supposed to do this stuff to dodge these people, and I don't understand their tells and things. But eventually, you pick it up and you're like, oh crap, I'm getting it, I'm mm-hmm. understanding it. And so you're able to progress through the game further and further until you beat it. And you're like, yes, I finally did.
Right, right.
That level of accomplishment is just, it feels empowering to me.
Right, there are a lot of games that require a level of mastery to complete it, which is the thing I want to do.
Okay.
And so those are the types of games which I will let them suck my time in to reach that level,
right?
But only in service of completing it.
Okay.
So even when I'm talking about Mario games, which I will go through and get all the you know the special coins, and you know I want to collect it. It's again, it's a completionist thing,
right?
But I kind of don't care if my jumps are perfect. Yeah. Only if I get the things that I want.
Yeah, and I think
my jumps sometimes have to be perfect, yeah. And so I will get good.
Okay. That. Yeah. I can totally respect that. Like I feel like. At a certain, you don't need to get literally perfect jumps. If you're trying to compete at the literal highest level, then you have to get to that point.
Right.
Like if you're going to Evo and you're fighting in Marvel vs. Nobody plays Marvel anymore.
but if you're a new one coming, right?
Yeah, there's a new one coming. If you're going and competing in the highest level, you have to get to that point. But no, for the most part, everybody is at their, local level. And mm-hmm. So you don't have to get that good. You just have to be the second. You just have to beat the second best person.
You know, it's funny. This is almost a matter of scale. Like you've said a couple times, yeah. Like that, you know, you're not professional class, but like I'm imagining somebody walking in, gets in the fourth mic and saying, Steven, you don't care about mastery. Why don't you?
Well, shoot. Yeah.
It kind of in the same way you're saying to us.
Yeah, I guess like, it's how much you or how. Yeah. It just depends on how much you want to be satisfied by the game.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's interesting because the types of games like that are keyed to that. So Dark Souls is one, fighting yeah. games are, and there's the two to competitive versus like, you know, mastering a system.
Yeah.
Right. As designers, what do we want to think about games that require mastery of the players? And does that lock off certain audiences or do you need, or say you want to make the game compelling enough for someone to master it?
Yeah. I mean, for Fingence, I feel like I talk about Fingence a bunch, but I haven't explained the game.
Stop apologizing. Well, I want to hear more about Fingence.
All right, I'm going to explain it. So Fingence is a side-scrolling shoot 'em up, and it's cooperative. So people on your team might have the ability to block bullets for you, or they might be able to heal your team, and stuff like that. And so everybody on the team is cooperating to take down bosses and the level and continue through the campaign. And so for Fingence, I mean, it's a shoot 'em up, and so there's already an aspect of mastery in that you have to be able to dodge bullets. It's a little bit more difficult and yet less difficult in our game because a lot of times in shoot 'em ups, you are like a pixel, and so it's very easy to dodge bullets because there's only a little bit that can get hit. In our game, your whole hitbox is your body. And in our game, also, you have characters that can block bullets for you and characters that can heal you, so it's easier in that way. And so we kind of battle with that. In one way, we want players to like master the game and be able to get through on a harder difficulty mm-hmm. than and feel empowered that they were able to make it through. I've seen people, you included, Mark.
Yeah. No, I want to be good at that.
Yeah, game. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen people who want to complete our hardest difficulty is Darkest Ocean, but we haven't balanced that at all, so I don't count that as a difficulty. but to be able to complete through that end of the campaign, and people will try over and over and over again, and that's very thrilling for them, and I enjoy watching that. And then there are other players that start on easy mode, and they're like, I don't know how to move, or what the heck does this gadget do, and then they give up. And that feels crappy for me, because I want people to be able to experience the fun of the game regardless of how experienced they are in an action game. And so I battle with that very frequently. I want more people to experience the game. Our game is generally more approachable than other shmups because it has that cooperative aspect and you can rely on your team to help you go through things that you might have difficulty dealing with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've worked on that a little bit, but it's still at the end of the day a difficult game, and so we are sort of alienating part of the fan base that might enjoy the game because of that. And so I'm not sure the answer. I don't know the answer to that.
I want to play on Darkest Ocean all the time,
yeah.
Which is weird because I don't like mastery very much. So that's really interesting. Maybe it's like all the blowing stuff up.
Well, for me, I mean, I like truly not just because we're pals, but mm-hmm. I love playing Fingence and I want to beat it every time. And I think, and I want to be good at it
mm-hmm.
so I can beat it.
Yeah.
And I think that's, for me anyway, that's the important part is, and when you say you worry about alienating players,
yeah.
I think that, not to say you shouldn't worry about it, but I think that you're in a good position in Fingence, particularly because the game, the progress is compelling so that I who am not that interested in like you know, mastering the hand-eye coordination of many games for its own sake, I feel it's worth it to do. And I feel the sense of accomplishment. And because it's cooperative, like, that social aspect is an important part of not just being good, but being good with players. And you have this great balance of the different gadgets for the different characters, where they play off each other. And I mean, that's the thing. That's how you can draw in people who maybe aren't willing or aren't normally willing to put in the time.
Yeah, actually.
By giving more, you know, more of that mechanics and having that cooperative element. Like, I think maybe you don't realize this, but you may have just cracked it. Like,
maybe, yeah. I guess the cooperative aspect has a lot. Now that I think about it, most of the games I've been talking about besides Vengeance were competitive. Mm-hmm. And so you're competing against other people, but you're by yourself doing that.
Right. And when you say that, that's the to be the best.
Yeah.
Right. That's the goal. And like, I am not, I don't care. Mm-hmm. But if I have to be the best to beat the last boss in Darkest Ocean, damn it, I'll be the best.
All right. All right. Wow. Okay.
Martha, Martha, will you be the best with me?
Oh, yeah. As long as I get Sparky.
Okay.
Cool. Cool. Wow. Okay. This is, yeah, this is not the direction I expected to go, but this is way better. Awesome. 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 I'm glad we could talk about this.
And our next topic, Martha, this one's you. What do you got for us?
Strategy guides and wikis.
Okay. So if you're not good and you need to be good, like from Steven's topic, this is...
How you get good.
Yeah, this is exactly, yep, exactly.
Segway.
We're stitching together a quilt here, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought of this topic because strategy guides were one of the ways I got into video games. Because when I was a kid, we could play computer games. So we had a lot of adventure games and stuff. But I didn't. We didn't have any consoles or handheld things until... one day at Target, I bought, or somewhere, I don't know, I bought a strategy guide to one of the Pokemon games, and I didn't have the game, but I played the strategy guide as if it was the game, like D&D'd it to myself, like, now I walk here, and now I walk here, and now...
That's such a charming story.
That's cool.
And I think the reason my mom let us get a Game Boy is she caught me doing that one day, and it was like, oh, maybe we should, okay, fine, I'll get you a game. Like, you can buy a Game Boy for yourself, it's fine.
She's like, my kid's weird. What can I do to de-weird her a little bit?
Get her a video game console?
Right, that'll do it.
That's how I started with strategy guides. And then people were talking on the Slack a little bit about them, and how some people think they're... There's different views on the usefulness of them versus the are you just cheating?
Right.
Yeah.
So what are your guys' experience with strategy guides and what games do you use them for?
Okay. That's a good question. When I was younger, I used to use a lot of strategy guides. And I mean, part of it was they used to come with like cool posters and stuff.
Yeah.
That would draw you in. And I mean, you're like 8 years old. You want a fancy poster for your fancy Donkey Kong 64 game. I don't know. And so I guess I use them for those games, but in general, nowadays especially, I don't, unless I'm extremely frustrated with the game or like, yeah, I haven't used a strategy guide in a long time, but I haven't been playing that many. But yeah, I guess back in the day when I had an N64, we had a bunch of strategy guides for like Paper Mario, and we had one for Donkey Kong 64. My favorite strategy guide, I have a favorite strategy guide. My favorite strategy guide is Donkey Kong Country 2's. I think we had the official one, and we had like a bootleg version, which is really cool. I like the official one better because it had cool pictures and stuff. And I think, though, the official one had errors, so we had to use the bootleg one for a couple of levels, which was interesting. But yeah, I guess when it's really difficult or they have really difficult to find secrets like Donkey Kong Country, I would use it because I wanted to get everything. Especially in those games. Those games are collectathons. So those are the kinds of games I would use.
Cool. What about you, Mark?
So the first, this is a bit of a sideways version of the story, but when I was young, I had an NES when I was young, but I didn't have a lot of games. My friend was like the friend with all the stuff. Like he had a grand piano and a jukebox and like networked computers.
Oh, wow.
And like, oof, this is early 90s, guys. Like, so I played Doom on his LAN.
Oh, like, dang.
Crazy stuff. He, you know, his parents did okay. Mm-hmm. So, you had a laser disc player. I just want to tell stories about him now. the one thing that I remember is he had all like tons of NES games, and I went to his house to play, even though I had the system and enough to keep me busy. Mm-hmm. But that's where I went when I wanted to play video games. And he had I just looked this up while you guys were talking, but Nintendo Power gave away a copy of Dragon Warrior, which is Dragon Quest, the first Dragon Quest game. In America, it's called Dragon Warrior because of a trademark issue. And in order to introduce that series to Western audiences, Nintendo Power gave it away with a subscription. And my friend got it this way. Mm-hmm. And when that happened, he wasn't interested in this game. He didn't really want to play. Mm-hmm. But he had this thing, and like, so we tried it out together. And so he got a strategy guide for it. Or was it that the Nintendo Power came with it? It had a big map. It was a whole deal.
Okay.
And so that's my memory of it, is it was a way to discover this game that I wasn't terribly interested in.
Huh.
And it almost felt kind of Narnia-ish in a sense. Like, we kind of didn't know what to expect, but we had the bound guide to take us through there.
Huh.
And so I have that little wistful sort of memory of that's what guides can do for you. And it's very similar kind of what you're talking about, Martha, like that it opened you to the world of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, like, I think nowadays it's like, if I'm stuck on something, I'm like, I'll try it 30 times and then I'll go to GameFAQs. Like,
yeah,
you know, but I try to hold off as long as possible. Yeah. But when you're young, I think you have a different attitude.
Oh yeah.
About that. It becomes, it unlocks the world.
Huh.
And so I have like a soft spot for those types of things. But in this modern era, there's just not much that services that. It's very much like people writing the, here's how you do it, just the facts, ma'am.
Yep.
And less of that kind of like rich sort of tome that was, emblematic of those early days.
Yeah.
It's right. Almost as if they were like books and lore on them and yes. Into themselves. Like my favorite thing about the Pokemon ones is that, you know, with the Game Boy, you had this little screen, but in the strategy guide, you saw the whole route or level.
Yeah.
And like all spread out, and you're like, that's, you know, this is what they were designing for, not this little screen. Like, this is what the real world looks like if you were there. Like,
that's really cool. Like, in the Donkey Kong Country strategy guides, I guess really Donkey Kong Country 2, they had like the whole level. Yeah, like you were saying, like they had the whole level shown up on the thing. And so it was really cool. You got to see that whole vision and stuff. When me and my brother, we got Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, and we were feeling nostalgic, so we got the strategy guide for it too.
Nice.
But the maps were just like little, they were just like colors, or like colors of the map, not like the actual map. It was mono color.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was less cool, because like you didn't get to see stuff that nobody else would have seen unless you got the strategy guide. I think that's part of it, right? Like, there's exclusive things that you get from it.
Yeah.
Like you were talking about with like being able to understand the world better. Maybe other people who played Dragon Warrior didn't get that kind of experience that you got because you had that.
Yeah. I don't know. It's funny how we all have these like sort of memories that are very similar in that which is not really the function of these things now as adult players.
Yeah. Right? You really just use it to make sure you can get through something that's obnoxious that you don't want to deal with.
Right. Cause it's like bedtime and you got to go to work tomorrow.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just different for kids. Then they just have all the time in the world to just play this game. And so they just experience that or that aspect of the game differently than we do now.
The last strategy guide I did buy was for the Little Big Planet series.
Oh, okay.
Because there's like a million collectibles. Mm. And that also has a great creator's guide in the back for the level editor.
Oh.
So it's the book had some extra value for that. And it did remind me a little bit of the old. So I wonder, I mean, we should get some kids on and ask them.
Yeah. Do you think you would make a strategy guide for the games that you're making?
Oh, crap. I mean, don't they contract that out or something?
Prime is probably a little busy with every other strategy guide.
Yeah. I suppose.
Hey, guys.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about Metro Nexus, your game, Mark, and the game you based it off of, City Connection. Yes.
The classic. Look it up.
That had a secret... lore in the manual, like the user manual.
Oh, yeah, right.
The cats.
Yes, the obstacle cats.
Obstacle cats.
Yeah. Bamboo shoots. There's a very funny little descriptions of what they are. And it's funny, it's the English translation of what was surely a joke in Japanese. that the English translators were like, how are we going to make this work? I think the line is like, these cats stand in the road waving a flag for reasons only known to themselves.
Very clever.
You know, it's fun. I'm making an arcade style game. And so I'm debating how much of the game's universe, which I've developed way more than is probably necessary. None of it's really in the game, and I'm kind of debating how much to put in the game, not just because I don't have a lot of time to do it, but also because I kind of want to keep it an arcade game. That might be a way. Actually, I suggested this to you guys, the Finges team, that like you guys were talking about cutscenes, and like, because you guys have a rich sort of story wrapping around your game as well. And I suggested like make a website. Like,
yeah,
That's a way to
a way to portray the story. Yeah, right. You did suggest that. That's right. Right.
Which I mean, and that's of it. And you could certainly have tips for new players. Mm-hmm. You could make that work.
Yeah, when we were talking about having people. I guess we really were talking about like maybe players, our community who played the game a bunch, would make their own wiki and be able to discuss strategies, and people would have like a list of all of the different things they can do in the game. And so we hadn't really thought about making it ourselves. I guess we would be the most qualified to do that, but right now we're too focused on making the game to tell people how to beat it. But that is interesting. It would be pretty cool if like, There are some games out there that have been made that like you almost are reliant on a wiki, you know, to be like, what's the name? Terraria. That game, they basically kind of just throw you in there. There's a little bit of instruction, but for the most part, you don't know what the heck you're doing unless you go on the wiki and figure out what your actual goal is. Mm-hmm. Like you won't ever find any bosses unless you look it up. Unless they've changed that recently. I haven't played the updates, but, those games, you need a guide. Mm-hmm. I guess there are some games like that. I can't think of any other ones offhand right now. But
I use the Stardew Valley wiki a lot just to be like, when is this in season? Where is this fish?
Okay. Do you feel like you need the wiki in order to do that? Do they have like tips in there to tell you that stuff?
It's like a catalog of all the things and like what everyone likes. It was interesting talking to Adia, who was one of our guests a couple episodes ago. And she plays the game without looking at the wiki, which is, she's like, oh, I found out that Sebastian likes this and such. I'm like, what? You had to find that out? I just looked up whatever he liked best and did that.
Well, Adia is like a figure outer type. She's next level genius.
Yeah.
That
doesn't surprise me. You just assume she could figure it out because she can.
So I don't feel like I need it, but like the way I play the game, like I don't want to spend time mastering it. So take the shortcut with the wiki. But it's interesting. Wikis are cool. They do a thing that strategy guides couldn't, in that like you can have your community actually contribute to them, which strategy guides is like one person telling you all the stuff.
Yeah.
Have you guys contributed to any game wikis?
When I was younger, I participated in the Super Mario wiki forum. I really wanted to talk about the lore of Super Mario. This is like the geekiest I've ever been. But I think I was like 12 or something. And I think a lot of the people on there were like 8 or 7 or 5 or something. And so all of the discussions I ended up trying to, I was really into Donkey Kong Country. And so I had tried to have like a whole lore on like the transition between Donkey Kong Country and Donkey Kong Country Returns, the story of the differences in the story and stuff. And people were like, yeah, that's cool. But Luigi's my favorite character or something. And I was like, I'm not going to get anything out of this. I haven't participated in specifically adding strategy to wiki, but the community is there on the wiki. So I wanted to, and I used to, back then I used to read on the forum all the time because I was really into, I really like reading about Mario stuff because it was just kind of random, obscure knowledge.
Yeah.
And so that was all interesting. So I participated in the forums. I felt like I wanted to talk about it and stuff. And a lot of the people on there, they did mess with the wikis and stuff. But I didn't myself personally. It was weird. It was a weird time, but it was an interesting experience.
You know, it's funny because when you asked the question, I was like, well, if any of us, it would be you, Stephen, because it requires mastery to be able to teach, right? But it's not just mastery, it's discovery, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's
yeah.
when you find something. And so for me, the only real sort of contribution I made to any kind of like knowledge about how a game works is with Myst Online, which I talked about
in
an earlier episode. Mm-hmm. I was really big into the Uru is what it was originally called. And that I was really big into that community. And for a time, when it was an online service, they would release new levels, and there's the whole story about how that didn't work in the end. But there was about a 6 month period where it felt like it was going to work, and every now and then they would release a new level, and we'd all rush in to play this new puzzle that was like brand new. And so like there was nowhere online to look for answers to this. And for a lot of games that's not unusual, but for a game like Myst with its history, like to be the first person to discover this world, and like. I'm not terribly sentimental about a lot of things, but like that, I really was hooked by that idea that I was the first person to it. And I did in fact map one of the ages for the first time.
Oh.
And I do sometimes think about that. But I was in fact an explorer in that world. And I did contribute back to that within the first hours of this thing being, and I was kind of rushing too. I was like, okay, I figured this out. And it was like it's like a geometry puzzle, and this one was, and it was an incredibly exciting moment. But it's sort of different from like the sort of measured like writing a volume in a tome. This was me like rushing to get my knowledge out, partly to be first, right? Which is like that's not the most noble pursuit, but people were also up at 4 a.m. like wanting to be among the first, and many of them got to beat that because I gave that information. And so I felt really proud in them in those moments.
Huh.
Which isn't to say I mastered that level or anything. It's just I discovered something.
Yeah.
And that's
cool.
That's such an interesting, cool feeling that I never got again.
Yeah.
Because it's rare. Right?
Yeah, right. Especially nowadays where, like, if anything happens, everyone knows about it immediately.
Yes. Yeah.
That's something I kind of miss from old stuff. Like, I used to have a collection of video game cheats. Back when games had cheats. You know, I remember those random little codes and what was it?
Vengeance needs cheats.
Vengeance. Oh, it could. No. That would be cool though.
Forget it. Out of your mind.
But back in the day, I used to buy cheat guides or cheat books, and they would just have a whole list of random cheats in a whole bunch of games. And most of the games you didn't have. They had a ton of games, like 100 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the games you didn't have. But like the ones you did have, it was really cool to be able to input a new code and stuff, and you would get something like big head mode or something.
Yeah, I was just about to say that.
Yeah, big head mode. Those are the best. But yeah, like that sense of discovery, like you found something before other people, or you have the guide, and everybody else needed to rely on you in order to get that.
Yeah,
that doesn't happen anymore. Mm-hmm. That story you were telling us about Myst Online, that's like. Amazing that you were able to have that experience.
Like a small little feather in my cap that like just a little thing that I'm proud of.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And there were a lot of people who in that community were regular contributors to the sort of like they were the Magellans of that community.
Yeah.
And so I just dipped in to that upper level for a brief moment.
Yeah.
But it's a cool feeling.
It is. Mm-hmm. You got to be the guide writer.
Yeah. Actually, for that one, it really helped that I have a graphic design background because I needed to make a map.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's awesome.
It was the right time. It was fate.
Cool.
I don't think I have anything else to say. Wow, that turned out to be a deeper topic than I thought it was going to be.
All right, that wraps it up for this topic. When we come back, we're going to take it in a completely different direction. So stay tuned. All right, we're back. Talk about the final topic. And this one's mine. And I wanted to, as a reaction to Steven's video game mastery, I wanted to do something the exact opposite of that, which is instead of mastering difficult games, I want to talk about designing party games, which is a totally different beast, but it's on the continuum. So we'll connect it together. But like, so party games is a pretty broad topic, but like Mario Party is the quintessential example.
Oh, yeah.
Mario Kart qualifies, right?
Yeah,
because it's aggressive rubber banding. Drawful, like the Jackbox Party Pack. I mean, a lot of board games, classic board games, fall into this, where they're simpler rules, mainly for funsies. That's kind of the, maybe that's the not fair description of them. Like, there's a lot more that goes into it than that. I mean, what other examples do you guys have of like classic party games that you guys either grew up with or you're super into right now?
Super Smash Brothers.
You think so?
Yeah, that's totally a party game.
Especially N64.
Yeah. I mean, that's half the reason why I'm into fighting games. Most the reason why I'm into fighting games, frankly.
But like, if I'm playing against someone who's played before, I'm not going to have any fun.
See, the thing about Super Smash Bros., and this goes back into the designing thing, there's items, mm-hmm. and I mean, it's four player.
Yeah.
You don't have to play teams or whatever. There's just four people, and there's a whole bunch of obstacles and hazards in a lot of the stages.
Right.
And so, a lot of the, when you're in a free for all match and there's a bunch of items and things, there's just a lot of chaos, which levels the playing field quite a bit because there's randomization. Which prevents those who are amazing from being even more amazing because some guy might randomly walk into a star and then be immune to all of your combos.
Oh, okay. So that's that kind of leveling, right? Something that Mario Kart, it's the same thing, items, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
My game is the same thing. It has items, which I know Lane is like, no, Final Destination mode for this game.
Ironically, that game, I prefer items on than
which
off.
You normally don't.
Yeah, I know. It's a weird, because I guess I don't go for mastery in that game. Oh boy, we were just talking about this is the mastery episode.
Yeah.
Steven, I think it's just that you contain multitudes.
Maybe.
I think I'm convinced. I mean, I wouldn't think of Smash as a party game, but I think the way you describe it, I think you're right.
Yeah, for sure.
I'll concede that.
I mean, I've definitely brought it to parties and people just hang out playing it random and they're not taking it too seriously. Mm-hmm, so I think that's a lot of it. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should, I mean, we've talked about examples of a party game. Maybe we should define what a party game is.
Yeah, so, I mean, the way I kind of think of it is like a game that has, there's two elements that I would say, and this is debatable and subjective, but I would say it needs a rule set that's approachable.
Yeah.
Right? This is kind of where I'd bump up against Smash a little bit, but again, it doesn't have to totally meet this. Mm-hmm. A rule set that's approachable. Someone can pick it up and play. Because you're at a party, you don't want to learn it, right?
Yeah, right.
And then the other one is like a sort of a casual aesthetic. It's like something that is approachable. And that has a lot less to do with the game design and a lot more to do with the art and the style and the flow and the kinds of things that make a game fun in a group.
Okay.
Right? I think, and then those two are the sort of two dimensions, I think, that I would say are important to party games in various degrees. There's exceptions, I imagine. Do you guys feel that makes sense?
I agree with that. So basically, just you want to maximize approachability as much as possible. It sounds
right,
like
right. But also, I mean, and you know, we can get into it. But like things like, how does scoring work? Like, is it designed? I mean, really, it's the opposite of mastery. It's like if they've played this game for 30 years at various parties and they introduce it to somebody, that person should be able to win.
Yeah,
And that's a difficult, as a designer, that's a very difficult challenge to not make it just flipping cards or rolling dice.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure.
I think one game that does that really well is you place objects.
The chicken horse game. Oh, dear. Shanti, come back. Help us. I know you're talking chicken.
It's super something, right?
Super chicken horse.
We'll look this up and then.
Ultimate Chicken Horse.
Yes, I think that game hits all the things you were talking about, Mark, in that very approachable rule set. You get an item, you place the item, you try to get, or the hazard, and you try to get from point A to point B. Mm-hmm. Whoever does gets points.
Yeah.
Whoever gets the most over the line points wins the round.
Yeah. Right. And that really hits it on the aesthetic grounds, too, because it's silly. It does require some skill to play.
Right.
You know, you will be really bad at it for a couple times, but it is approachable. So yeah, I think you're right. I think that does a pretty good job of making a game that you do want to put some time into, but you don't have to worry about putting much time into.
Yeah. So I don't know. A lot of times it depends on the game, but when I oftentimes find myself not enjoying party games that are too random.
Ooh, Kill Surprise.
I sort of enjoy Smash when it's free for all and there's a bunch of items and stuff, but I much prefer 1v1s, no items, Final Destination, spots only. In some place, I mean, when I'm just in a party setting and I'm just trying to enjoy the company of people, then I'm cool with it. But like, I would prefer the competitive aspect of games.
Mm-hmm.
I generally prefer that. And so I'm kind of conflicted by party games.
But it's funny because I would say, from me observing you, Steven, your favorite game in the whole wide world is Concept, which is a board game where nobody wins, and its main mechanic is laughing.
I suppose. So Concept, the way I like to describe Concept is it's like charades, but you play it with a board, and there's a bunch of pictures. You use the pictures to describe what you're trying to get people to guess. And I kind of disagree with that in that, like, it's the person who's doing picking the pictures on the board, they have there's some skill involved. There's no randomization in that.
That's true.
Really. So I feel like you're the person is trying to display their skill at communicating using only the pictures provided. Mm-hmm. And so that's an aspect of it that I enjoy. It's not competitive. Everybody, it's all completely cooperative, but we're all trying to figure this out together, and there's no random aspect that puts you down or lowers your skill level. And so a lot of times, like, I enjoy Mario Kart, but I generally enjoy the battle system or the battle mode because racing is random. A lot of times it's just random. Oh, I got hit by a blue shell, even though I was in first place. And I completely understand why they do that, because I mean, it sucks to be in first place, kind of, because you're just driving by yourself.
It's lonely at the top.
Yeah. And so you need somebody you need something to allow other people to interact with you. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like, I'm winning. I feel like I should still be winning.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I oftentimes I'm like, oh, man, with those kinds of games.
Well, here I challenged you with a contradiction. But truthfully, I also like battle mode in Mario Kart way better than racing.
Yes.
So it's me that isn't disagreeing with myself now.
Why is that?
I kind of don't know, but I much prefer it. Maybe it's just I don't like racing games. I don't know. But
I quite like
Mario Kart Battle Mode, and I was very disappointed that Mario Kart 8 did not really include it.
Yeah, that was disappointing, for sure.
But I wouldn't, I mean, I played that at parties, but maybe when I think of party game, I think of something you'd play at like a cocktail party.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or like a Friendsgiving or something, where less like you're having your friends over to play video games.
Okay.
I mean, that's a real fuzzy definition. But with Mario Kart Battle Mode, I would say is less of a party a game experience than Mario Kart Racing.
I would agree with that.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Two games come to mind.
Yeah.
One is a card game called We Didn't Playtest This.
I would hate that game.
The rounds last is about as long as a clawbreaker round.
Okay. So like 2 to 3 seconds?
Yeah. sometimes gets around the table, sometimes not with the cards. They just say, basically, you try to win, and some cards say you win, some cards say you lose.
Really?
And, well, like with various conditions, like everyone, like go 1, 2, 3, and then put out the rock, paper, scissors or whatever. Mm-hmm. And whoever did scissors or like whatever was on the card loses or something.
Oh, wow. Oh, that is an interesting game.
Or one card is called Bomb, and you just put it in front of you. But if four people end up putting it in front of you, everyone loses.
Oh.
And lots of other very silly cards. Mm-hmm. So that one's really fun to play at parties because it's quick. So then people can come in and out, which is another thing I think party games, I think make good party games are games that people can jump in and out of really easily.
Yeah, for sure.
And then the other game I thought of is Space Team.
Space Team.
It's on your phone.
Uh-huh. Oh, I think I know what you're talking about.
It's on my phone?
It can be.
And everyone has buttons except, and then they get directions, but the directions are for other people's buttons.
Okay.
So
never mind. I don't know this game.
So you'll get a thing that says like, turn the hyperdrive to 4, but you don't have the hyperdrive. Steven has the hyperdrive. So then you have to yell out, hyperdrive to 4. And you don't know who has it. Oh. So it's just whoever is like, hyperdrive to 4. So no one's really good at it. But it's
so it's
really
like
fun.
An episode of Star Trek where everyone's lost their memory.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, those kinds of games I think I could get into. It's random in terms of the rules you get, but not random in terms of like things randomly preventing you from winning or losing. Uh-huh. It's all skill based. You just have to be flexible and adaptable to things.
Yeah.
That sounds much more appealing than you got hit by a blue shell. I think that's an aspect of it. Like I said, I understand why they'd added it.
But that's the thing. If you do feel a little bit bad by getting the blue shell, that is weighed against the 4 other people or 3 or 4 other people who who then have the shot to overtake you.
Yeah.
So the person who's just behind you and doesn't get screwed over by the blue shell, mm-hmm. like, is the game giving them an unfair advantage and making it more enjoyable for them? Is that worth taking it away from you?
That's the question that they had to answer, I'm
right.
assuming.
And that's what I'm interested in about in relation to mastery.
Yeah.
Right? Do good party games encourage an easier mastery curve where you can play for an evening and then everyone's a master at it?
Mm-hmm.
Or should a good party game discourage mastery? In which case, that your success is not necessarily a function of how good you are at the game,
yeah.
but of something else. And then your satisfaction is not related to if you won or not, perhaps.
It's just what ended up happening in the game that you enjoy.
Yeah, so I do know that when we do board games here at Glitch, what I like to do on board game nights is play as many, one I've never played before.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very bad at them because I've never played them before.
Yeah.
And I really like that. I have a lot of fun learning new mechanics and having fun and doing and socializing with people.
Sure.
I wouldn't be super interested, going back to the mastery discussion, in playing the same board game over and over and over until I was just the best at it.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I'd rather just play 7 more board games and lose them all. Like, that seems more fun to me.
Right.
And so Martha, if you're designing a party game, what would you want the player to get out of it? Like, if it's the mandate is it has to be good at parties, like, what restrictions does that put on you, you think?
Huh. I like as I said before, the being able to jump in and out.
Yeah.
I don't like getting tied down with that's why board games often do not catch my interest as much, because I'll get tied to that particular group doing that particular thing for a long time. And if I leave, it will ruin the experience for everyone else.
Right.
As opposed to a video game, maybe, or like the types of games we've been talking about, party games that have short rounds or like a way to jump in and out, like Vengeance or Metro Nexus or whatever, so that what me choosing a different thing does not break everyone else's experience. I think that's one part that I like about party games.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree. I think that's very important.
Mm-hmm.
Then I do really like concept, but one of the things I really enjoy about concept is that you are not beholden into even playing the game. You can just sit around and watch people do it, or you can just peek and go, oh, here's my guess, and then walk away. it's extremely flexible in that way.
Right, right.
And so that's an aspect.
So scoring, that's another topic.
Scoring.
So concept is a game that in the instructions, doesn't it say don't use the rules? Because we don't play by any of the rules. We just play the sort of activity part of it. We don't mm-hmm. keep score. We don't have timers. We don't do any of that stuff.
Yep.
And so is that, I mean, that a good party game can do that. And mm-hmm. then there's plenty that do have scoring or winners.
Yeah.
Like designing from scratch, like what's more appealing to each of you?
I guess that aspect and concept where when we play without score, it makes it more appealing because, if you start playing with score, then you're more committed to the game and you have to sit there for a while and somebody has to get to a certain scoring cap. And so somebody has to win. So you're more committed to the game without score. You can just play it through one round or half a round or whatever and leave when you want. Mm-hmm. And plus with the scoring system, in concept, if you did that, then everyone is competing against one another, which muddies the cooperative aspect, makes it less. Maybe that, yeah, it makes it less.
I guess I don't actually know the rules to concept. I've played it 100,000 times. But if, people around a table, is it whoever guesses it first?
So whoever guesses it gets 2 points, and the person who was doing the board putting on the pictures gets 1 point automatically.
Okay.
So the person who guesses it is the one who wants to.
So you might want to build an answer together with the other players.
Yeah.
But you want to be the one to,
Yes.
Like you work there together. So there's a little bit of uneasy alliance thing.
Right. And that's
I wonder if maybe that they recommend not to play with the rules because they just found it was fun enough.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't, because that, I bet a really good version of that game using those rules could be played.
I mean, for sure. It's a different game.
Sure.
It's,
sure.
I mean, I would argue it's not as much of a party game at that point, which is totally fine.
But then you have a game I guess people don't necessarily look at their scores for Drawful, but Drawful has scoring, and I definitely pay attention to who won.
Right. That's a great example because I don't care if I win.
Oh. Yeah,
but I do. But I'd like to know who won.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's interesting because they keep the score on that maybe that's part of it, is they keep the score hidden until the end. So you don't, well, not at the end, but like at each round, you can see the score. Mm-hmm. But like you can't really see who's going to end up winning because at the end, like the last round can change things so drastically.
Yeah, you see who's in the lead, but that doesn't really give you the information about what two rounds from now is going to look like.
Yeah.
Whereas other games, you're like, oh, that's the person I'm gunning for. Like, and Drawful is a game that's played in tandem. It's not played, you don't play against anybody. You all play together and you interact, but like there's no, you don't disadvantage another player by something you've done. Right.
Well, yeah. No, I kind of. If you make a crappy drawing, kind of
it hurts you.
Yeah, I suppose it hurts you too.
Mm-hmm. That game is surprisingly well balanced in terms of its scoring, but yet I do not care what my score is.
Yeah, I honestly don't really like Drawful very much because it feels like it kind of feels random as to who wins and loses.
Because it is.
It is. It really is. Like, because you might get some extremely obnoxious. Prompt like I can't come up with one off Abe Lincoln's dinner. I don't know, something stupid. So you would just draw like a chicken. Yeah, right. So you just draw a chicken and some guy with a beard, and then nobody figures it out, and then you're like, well,
sounds like you hate fun, Steven.
Maybe secretly. But yeah, I don't know, that like that game, it kind of just feels like we're all just grasping at straws for the most part, and so I don't really enjoy that one too much. But I can see why people like it, because it feels random and everybody's just having fun doing.
Well, it's almost more party stuff than game.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
and that's the line that I can see. Once you cross over there, I can see a lot of people saying like, "You guys have fun. I'm not really interested."
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So like, I don't generally enjoy that one too much, but I would never say it's not a party game, and I wouldn't say it's not a game. Mm-hmm. But that's a good example. Yeah, Marth, I agree with that. Mm-hmm.
I really like it, but I really like drawing.
Man, we should probably link Jackbox.
Yeah.
As much as we're talking about.
Yeah. This episode's sponsored by.
No, it's not. Legal.
But there was this one game where like they gave two people a phrase, and you had to come up with the best answer. In whatever way you determine would be the best answer. Maybe it's the best answer that answered that question.
Or Quiplash?
Quiplash, yes, that's the one. Or maybe it's just the funniest one. That one I enjoyed because, like, two people, and I guess maybe I just really like competition, but two people were competing over the best ones, and it just ended up being, like, really funny and silly, but the rules made sense, and you could actually, like, compete.
Mm-hmm.
And so there wasn't random. I mean, there's randomness in that. Oh, you got a really stupid phrase, but like if you're clever, you can come up with something that's better than the other person, or you can get lucky like me and just manage to put in a letter, and the other guy didn't put any answer, and so you get a free point. That was fun too.
I think we did learn it. You really like competition.
Yeah, I guess. So
well, that it really segues perfectly into my last question about this, which is about like co-op versus competitive party games.
Yeah,
like Concept is a co-op game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, many other, like Mario Kart is competitive.
Yep.
And Mario Kart needs to make modifications to make it so that everyone stays in it till the end, right?
Yeah.
A lot of party games work that way, where it's like it doesn't reveal who the winner is till the very end, so nobody drops out early. And that is against the sort of competitive nature of many games, whereas cooperative games need to sometimes modify their rules in order to let people feel like they did better than other people, even though you're all working towards the same goal.
Yeah.
So there's like a little bit of both salt and pepper you want in any good party game, but then obviously there's ones that lean really far one or the other, and I'm kind of torn because like what, especially with board games, I really like co-op board games.
Me too.
I think those are like just a blast, and I really enjoy working with others and like talking out a solution and then as a team making a decision. Like that is so much fun, and also no one has to be good at it. Mm-hmm. As a team you have to be good, but those games are designed, I think, so that you win most of the time.
Yeah.
And like, that doesn't bother me.
Like Save the Whales.
I don't know that game.
Yeah, what's that?
There's this board game company called Animal Town Games or something like that. And they made a bunch of games like Dam Builders, which is a beaver game where you had to work together as a group of beavers trying to build a dam before the bulldozer came and bulldozed it. And then Save the Whales, where you had to save all the whale species. And
okay.
Anyway. Nerd.
Were those both cooperative games though? Okay. Huh. Yeah, I would agree with you though, Mark, that like cooperative games, or specifically party games, are much more enjoyable. But I think the best ones are the ones where you feel like you can contribute even a small amount. Because a lot of times in cooperative, specifically cooperative board games, there's that, for me, there's a lot of times when there's like three other people coming up with all the strategy and stuff, and I'm just sitting there going, yep. I completely agree. Because I don't know what's going on, or I just feel like I'm not included in the discussion.
Okay.
Which, I mean, it's not like they're excluding me from it. It's just maybe I am not better at, or I'm not very good at coming up with this particular strategy.
I think it's that you're not interested enough to start the ball rolling.
Yeah.
And then by the time the ball's rolling, you're like left behind.
Yeah. And so I just leave them to it a lot of the time.
Because I'm the one kicking the pebble down the hill. Like, I definitely will. I am like, all right, guys, let's do a plan. Let's get it. Do this, 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 this. Like, I am the opposite of that.
Okay.
I'm really into like being like, you know, like coordinating that discussion.
Okay. Yeah. I could tell. You definitely seem like that. Yeah,
this surprises nobody.
but that's why I like concept so much, is that like you can just ask off. You can just say like, maybe it's a birdcage.
Yeah.
And then people are like, oh yeah, that's actually pretty good. Maybe that is the direction we need to go in. And so even the smallest contribution is beneficial.
Right. You know what? Mm-hmm. I think the thread I'm sensing in everything you've said is that you want individual agency, and you don't want anybody else to impact choices you make.
Yes.
So concept is that way, where whether you're guessing or you're giving the clue, like, you are free to say or do whatever you want, even though you are working together.
Mm-hmm. But nothing interferes with that, and you're just able to do it without any game designer influence.
Right. You want to move at your own pace.
Yes.
And then you like prefer competitive games because it is specifically about, you are only interested in your goal. So your interaction with other players is not, it's to impact them in service of your goal.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But I don't want the game to determine whether or not I am able to win.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I guess we figured out what I like about party games. Hopefully that answered your question in some ways.
I don't know. Well, I think that, like, you know, I framed the question as co-op versus competitive, but that's not even the right question. It seems like we all have a different kind of view on what's good about that's not the definition that matters to whether you like it. Or as designers, what you want to lean towards.
Well, right? Yeah, I guess to me, though, it seems like cooperative is the way to go for these kinds of games.
Yeah.
I mean, we've already went over it. Like, it makes most sense. It's less likely that if you're designing a cooperative game that you have to interfere with the player's ability to progress, or like an individual player who's better at the game's ability to progress.
Mm-hmm.
If it's cooperative, because everybody's pursuing the same goal, but everyone theoretically can have their own agency while they're working on the game, or while they're going through the game. And so that makes it more fun, at least for me.
Yeah.
Whereas competitive games, in order to put people on the same playing field, there has to be some form of randomization.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or everyone has to be a master.
Yes. But that makes it less of a party game at that point.
That's true.
Yeah. I suppose Sushi Go. I like Sushi Go. That's a drafting game. It's really simple. I guess that's probably why I like it so much. But it's still completely, it's random in what cards you get, but you have to make decisions based off of that randomization.
And that's another one where you really are, you do a little bit of strategizing by what you pick and what you pass, but you don't feel like anyone else is impacting your play.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah. And I mean, even when they do, they're the ones making that decision, not the game.
Right.
So that game works for me. I like that one, even though it's competitive. Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you feel about Overcooked?
Oh, Overcooked. Oh, yeah.
The elephant in the room.
Yeah.
So, Overcooked. I mean, I...
Wait. Martha, describe Overcooked.
Yes.
One of my favorite games in the world. You play... it's extremely cooperative in that, like, the whole point of the, like... It's the most cooperative game I've ever played.
Yeah, it's really cooperative.
If you don't cooperate, you will lose.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the few party games that mastery is important.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
The controls are very simple, but it requires, and it's strategic mastery in a sense.
And that I really,
that's what you
really
like.
I really like it.
That's a big smile on Martha.
Yeah, that definitely has a lot of mastery involved in that game.
Well, we brought it home, guys, full circle.
Yeah.
It's pretty exciting.
Nice.
Go team. We cooperatively did this episode. Yes.
And we didn't even need a strategy guide.
I think we've mastered it.
Quick, let's end the show before we make any more dad jokes. That's our show. If you haven't already, subscribe to Nice Games Club in your favorite podcast app, and be sure to give it a good review, like Abduak did, if you liked it, or are nice like us. It's incredibly important for new shows like ours to get noticed, so please spread the word. We need your help. We also want to hear directly from you, so follow us on Twitter and all the other things at Nice Games Club. Let us know how we're doing, send us your topics, and ask us your questions. Lastly, if you want to find out more about the show and your nice hosts, as well as get all the links and notes from this episode, visit online at nicegames.club. So until we start again, remember to play nice and make nice.